Washington. This is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, Europe-wide terror raids following the Paris attack. The U.S. Secretary of State visits terror sites in France. An analyst calls the terrorist raids an assault on Islam.
We must not let the murderers hijack and claim Islam for themselves, because it's not theirs and it's something that belongs to the 1.6 billion people around the world who are Muslims.
And police take a non-traditional role of youth educator to deter crime. It's all ahead. I'm Susan Yawkey. Cities in Belgium are on heightened alert after two alleged jihadists were killed by security services east of Brussels Thursday, while German security forces raided 12 homes across the country in a counter-terrorism operation early Friday morning. As Selah Hennessy reports, analysts say following the deadly Paris attacks last week, European states are on high alert and taking quick action to crack down against suspected terror plots.
The Belgian prosecutor's office said counter-terrorism police raided a cell of returnees from Syria who had been planning a major imminent attack in Belgium. He said the suspects, armed with AK-47s, handguns, ammunition, and explosives, were planning to kill police officers in public and in police stations. According to Belgian officials, the suspects opened fire on the security services in the town of Verviers. Two of the suspects were shot dead, and a third, who was seriously injured, was taken into custody. Officials say a total of 13 suspects were detained in Belgium, while two others were detained in France. Belgium has now raised its terror threat level to its second highest level, and in Verviers, residents said they were still in shock. I heard gunfire and explosions, said one resident, and it proved to be very serious. After what happened in Paris, says this Brussels resident, he doesn't have the feeling that Europe is safe. In Paris Friday, police evacuated a major train station after what they called a precaution following an alleged bomb threat. Meanwhile, German police say they arrested two Turkish citizens during the early morning raids. Martin Stoutner is from the public prosecutor's office in Berlin.
Seit den frühen Morgenstunden haben wir 12 Objekte in Berlin und eins in Brandenburg durchsucht.
He says the arrests were made based on the suspicion that preparations were being made in Syria for a serious, violent crime against the state. International security expert Sean Gregory from Britain's Durham University says security services across Europe are reassessing their response to perceived terror threats.
A revisiting of this calibration between the risk that you are aware of certain individuals, but you arrest them too early and then you don't have the evidence that you need to secure a conviction. You arrest them too late, of course, and the violent incident has actually taken place.
He says in the weeks ahead, we're likely to see security forces taking more rapid action.
Security forces have tended to err on the cautious side because they want a case to stick in court. But I suspect they will be intervening earlier perhaps than they would have done, disrupting plots, trying to roll up a few individuals, and also, of course, trying to help the French police and security services with their investigations.
Security services in Britain, Spain, and Bulgaria are looking into possible links between their countries and gunmen who carried out terror attacks in Paris last week that killed 17 people. Selah Hennessy for VOA News, London.
Police in France arrested a dozen people and a Paris train station was briefly evacuated as the country remains on high alert after last week's terrorist attacks. Lisa Bryant reports that the arrests coincide with a visit by Secretary of State John Kerry to the French capital.
Speaking to reporters, French Interior Minister Bernard Cazeneuve briefly described the early morning arrests of a dozen people around Paris.
Les enquêteurs de la direction centrale de la police judiciaire et de la direction centrale.
He says France remains on high alert with more than 120,000 police and military personnel deployed around the country. The French arrests coincide with similar operations against suspected jihadists in Germany and Belgium. For the moment, authorities say there appears to be no link between the two men killed during a Belgian police raid Thursday night and the three assailants who launched last week's Paris area terrorist attacks. But there are similarities in their profiles, including apparent links to radical Islam in the Middle East. Terrorism expert Mathieu Guider of the University of Toulouse says they may also reflect copycat efforts by European jihadists, a sort of one-upsmanship on the web and on the ground.
The one telling the others that they are better than them and the Belgium jihadists are trying to show off on the internet right now and to post many threats in French or in different languages against Belgium to say that they are able to do the same type of operation that has been conducted in France against Charlie Hebdo.
Those arrested around Paris Friday are suspected of having ties to French gunmen Saïd and Cherif Kouachi and Amedi Coulibaly, who killed 17 people in back-to-back attacks around Paris last week. Authorities acknowledge intelligence mistakes in failing to prevent the attacks, but analyst Guider says some of the new security measures now in place will not solve the problem.
Because the fact of putting, for example, the army in front of the Jewish schools, the Jewish locations and places is good for psychological to reassure these people and these citizens about the that the government is doing something for them. But from a security level point of view, and since we know that the terrorists target since Mirage, since 2011, they target primarily and essentially the military and the Jewish. Putting this type of measures is nothing more than putting two targets at the same place.
A debate is underway in France on measures to thwart future attacks, with suggestions ranging from better surveillance of the internet to de-radicalization programs and efforts to restore order in the country's poor and disaffected suburbs. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry has visited the sites of Islamic extremist attacks in France last week that left 17 people dead. VOA State Department correspondent Pam Doxson is traveling with the U.S. official.
On an overcast day here in Paris, Secretary of State John Kerry has visited the sites of three makeshift memorials to the victims of last week's Charlie Hebdo shootings. At one site, he paused and bowed his head in an apparent prayer. At another site located near the office of the Charlie Hebdo publication, he paused to read names that were left on sheets of paper on a wall in tribute to the victims. There he also laid a wreath. At the locations, Kerry was joined by French officials, including President Hollande and Foreign Minister Fabius.
Correspondent Pam Dawkins in Paris. The Islamic terrorist attacks in France and other Muslim-linked terrorist acts have brought scorn from other segments of society around the world, but also from the Muslim community. Ed Hussein, a Muslim senior advisor at the Tony Blair Faith Foundation, has written an article titled, "Charlie Hebdo, We Cannot Let the Paris Murderers Define Islam." We asked him what he means.
The Paris murderers can't define Islam because in the minds of the vast majority of the people of the world, the headlines, the media headlines, are dominated by extremists, murderers, beheaders, terrorists, and others. And for, sadly, many people, that is what Islam seems to represent today. And it mustn't, because one in four people around the world are Muslim, and their religion, my religion, very precious to us, ought not to be defined by the evil that's being unleashed in the name of this religion. So my argument is that, yes, Charlie Hebdo and the killings were wrong, and we shouldn't forgive the murderers, but at the same time, we must not let the murderers hijack and claim Islam for themselves, because it's not theirs, and it's something that belongs to the 1.6 billion people around the world who are Muslims. And for us, it's very precious and something that we treasure, and it mustn't be defined by the actions of the evil individuals.
And in your article, you actually say that the French attacks were an assault on Islam.
The French attacks were indeed an assault on Islam, and I say so because Muslims and Islam were not present in the West, in France, for the last 1,400 years. It then begs the question, well, why do we have 5 million Muslims in France, 30 million Muslims around the West today? It's because the West has institutional guarantees, freedoms, laws in place to allow Muslims like myself to practice our faith and live freely. To attack those very freedoms that allow us to prosper is to attack us, is to attack our way of life, is to then undermine the freedom that Islam and Muslims enjoy. So it's in many ways a hit or setting the very fire that we're trying to put out onto the House of Islam itself.
The attacks on this political magazine and the terrible tragedy there in their offices, it has raised the issue of freedom of speech and how to define freedom of speech, and should we really have so much freedom? What is your definition of freedom of speech through the eyes of a member of the Islam community?
That people are free to say whatever they want, whenever they want, however they want, but with some degree of restraint and wisdom in a given circumstance. It's the old test of not crying fire in a packed cinema or a packed theater. And knowing that, and incidentally, the Charlie Hebdo cartoonists were right to publish whatever it is they wanted. It's wrong of Muslims then to respond in the way that extremist Muslims have. Now that we're in a situation that we know that this provocation is going to lead to, God forbid, something worse than the Danish cartoons or what happened in Paris, I think the British media and the American media have exercised the right levels of wisdom and restraint in trying not to put further fuel on this fire, but allow for maturity, debate, and growth and education to materialize among the extremist fringe that wishes to silence the majority of us.
What is your reaction to the magazine's decision to put another cartoon of Muhammad on the front cover?
It's a real concern that it's being irresponsible. It's adding fuel to a fire at a time when some restraint ought to be exercised in order to let this period flow. And I say so because after the Danish cartoon controversy, we've seen now a greater acceptance of freedom of speech among Muslims. And when the Danish cartoons happened, I mean, I found it hard to stomach and to accept that level of insult on someone that we consider so dear, the Prophet Muhammad. But now, you know, 5 years on, I think millions of Muslims around the world are in a different mental space, as in, you know, live and let live. So after these kind of shock incidents, we need to let some time go by before Charlie Hebdo decides to go on another freedom of speech crusade. It's important that they continue to uphold their freedoms, but I think it's just worthwhile giving space for some growth and enlightenment and education to spread.
Ed Hussein, a senior advisor at the Tony Blair Faith Foundation and author of the article, Charlie Hebdo, We Cannot Let the Paris Murderers Define Islam. Recent opinion polls are showing a larger percentage of Americans favor at least limited military operations against the Islamic State in Iraq and the Levant, or ISIL. These polls also indicate public openness to expanding and escalating these operations if necessary. The findings suggest a turnaround in public attitudes after years of war weariness during America's involvement in conflicts in Iraq and Afghanistan. University of Maryland and Brookings Institution scholar Shelby Tahami conducted some of the research, and VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawy asked about his findings.
This is really interesting because, you know, when you look at all the issues that the American public has been focused on, and as you recall, in the past year, we've had two issues that have been in the public eye, particularly the Iran issue with all the looming deadlines for the nuclear issue, and the Israel-Palestine question, which obviously in the summer faced an episode of a lot of violence that had, you know, generated attention in the U.S. So the fact that they say ISIS is the number one threat, and 70% of them say that, and only 12% say Iran and 13% say Israel-Palestine, is really surprising. And I know that a lot of people have gone for the easy answer, the beheadings. But I think there's a problem with that explanation, in part because when you think about the beheadings, first you think about the ugly ruthlessness. Obviously, these are abhorrent events that, you know, turned a lot of people against ISIS all over the world. But frankly, even when President Obama told the American public that Assad used chemical weapons against his people, they still didn't want to attack his forces. And if you say it's because some of those beheaded were American, well, that can also take you in another direction. In fact, we've seen that in the past. Back in 1990, when American bodies of American soldiers were dragged in the streets of Somalia, this was said to have turned the American public against intervention, not for intervention. So it really needed exploration. And what we find in the poll is actually the principal reason why those who want to intervene more forcefully, including use ground forces, want to do so, is that they think that ISIS is just an extension of Al-Qaeda. That's the number one answer. The people think that there isn't much of a difference, that this is just a reincarnation of an organization they thought had been on the defensive, and suddenly it's rising in a way that concerns them, and they see it as unfinished business. Ruthlessness of ISIS is also a factor. It's really the number two factor, but it's interesting that it's not so much any potential threat to the American homeland or a threat to allies that is really pushing the public to want to say we need to intervene.
Did that ranking reflect a great support among Americans to put boots on the ground against ISIL if airstrikes fail to stop that terrorist group?
This is an interesting question, and we've been exploring it for a while. It's still a majority of Americans don't want to send ground forces. We have 57% of Americans overall that say we don't want ground forces, even if the airstrikes fail down the road. And my suspicion is it would be higher if, in fact, the decision is made to do so. The interesting thing, though, is that there is a really big difference across party lines. There is a huge opposition to sending ground forces among Democrats and independents, only 31% of independents and 36% of Democrats would support, under such circumstances, the possibility of sending ground forces if airstrikes fail. But among Republicans, you have 53% who are open to it and 46% who oppose it. Now, yes, that's a majority, slight majority, but Republicans remain divided because the fact is 46% say even if airstrikes fail, they clearly would oppose it. And that, you know, does tell you that the Republicans will probably be facing an interesting debate in the primaries, particularly among those who want to intervene more forcefully and those who don't.
University of Maryland and Brookings Institution scholar Shelby Tilhami. We plan on bringing you more of his remarks Monday on International Edition. A female terror suspect sought by French police after the attacks in Paris was found to have entered Turkey shortly before the attacks and traveled from there to Syria. Her travel route raises questions about whether Ankara is doing enough to fight groups like the Islamic State. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
Hayat Bumi Dien went to Istanbul just days before the attack and, after spending a few days in Turkey, reportedly crossed into Syria with the aid of smugglers. Political scientist Cengiz Aktar of Istanbul's Süleyman Şah University says the ease with which Bumi Dien travelled through Turkey has put Ankara in a difficult situation.
It's extremely damaging for the image of Turkey. Turkey was already on the spotlight regarding the passive collaboration with those fighters in Iraq and Syria. So today, Turkey's name is associated in the world media to this lady who is searched in connection with the killings in Paris. And it is far from being an enviable situation.
Ankara is facing growing criticism from its Western allies who claim the country has become a super highway for jihadists seeking to join the ranks of the Islamic State in neighbouring Iraq and Syria. The head of German domestic intelligence, Hans-Georg Maaßen, said this month that 90% of the 550 Germans who went to fight in Syria travelled through Turkey. But Semih Diz, diplomatic columnist for Turkey's Taraf newspaper and Al Monitor website, says the circumstances of Bumi Dien's escape underscores Ankara's frustration with Europe.
Turkey does have a point in some respects there. You know, when Prime Minister says that 35 million people visit Turkey and you cannot vet every person that comes into Turkey, especially if intelligence and information has not been provided about those persons. It appears Hayat Bumi Dien, this girl who is being sought now, she was not on the list of 500 names provided by France to Turkey. And despite that fact, apparently she was monitored while she was in Turkey, but the monitoring was dropped after a while because nothing irregular was found.
Ankara is expected to come under pressure to further tighten its border when Turkish Foreign Minister Mevlut Cavusoglu attends a meeting on countering the Islamic State in London next week. Improving intelligence cooperation will be a key issue at the meeting. Ankara has continuously complained about the failure of Western intelligence services to provide sufficient and timely information on jihadists. Early this month, the head of Turkey's intelligence service, Hakan Fidan, said security forces had deported over 1,000 jihadists and that 7,000 people were barred from entering Turkey. But despite such claims, columnist Diz warns Ankara will struggle to overcome growing Western suspicions over its allegiances.
I think this is because of the broader issue of Turkey's Islamist leanings at the moment in terms of its government, its reluctance to get its hands too much involved in the fight against ISIS, the outbursts by our president and anti-Israeli and anti-Western outbursts. He had strong words again concerning hypocrisy in the West after the Paris attack. I think when you combine all this, Turkey's really under the projector, and this feeds into the impression that somehow Turkey is not doing its share in trying to control its border as far as these radicals are concerned.
While Turkish officials continue to bristle at suggestions that they allow Boumediene to slip through their fingers, Western allies are likely to continue to question Turkey's commitment to the battle against IS. Observers say even if Turkey's NATO partners have reservations, they know that a country that shares a nearly 900-kilometre border with Syria is crucial in the battle against the jihadists. Dorian Jones for VOA News, Istanbul.
No matter how hard they try or how many of them there are, the police cannot be everywhere. So many deputies with the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department are looking for new ways to keep people safe in historically dangerous neighborhoods. In our new series, To Protect and to Serve, Elizabeth Lee reports on how some police are becoming teachers and mentors in the hopes of making everyone safer.
At 14 years old, Brian Fuentes has experienced firsthand what many Americans only see on TV.
You're exposed to drugs, you're exposed to gang violence, you're exposed to homicides, you're exposed to all sorts of dangers.
Fuentes is from South Los Angeles, an area plagued by poverty and crime.
7, 8, 9, 10.
But there is a safe haven here in an old police station that's been turned into an after-school youth center for students. It's called a Youth Activities League and is the result of a partnership between law enforcement and the nonprofit group Sheriff's Youth Foundation. Whether it's schoolwork, a game of basketball, or advice, students can get help there from staff, volunteers, and deputies from the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department. 17-year-old Andrea Duran used to distrust law enforcement.
I used to think they were just bad, the bad guys, catching the bad guys.
But that negative image of law enforcement quickly changed when Duran started coming to the Youth Activities League and got to know the deputies personally.
They can feel like family. That's what they are to me now.
I'm going to come today. 1, 2, 3.
This type of non-traditional policing helps break down preconceived stereotypes. Among many immigrants, that means showing them police in the U.S. are different from law enforcement in their home countries, says Deputy Alma Gonzalez, whose parents are immigrants.
In Mexico, unfortunately, you do hear a lot of corruption. There is a lot of corruption. And then coming to this country, whatever contact they had had with law enforcement, it wasn't very positive because of either immigration or the uniform, it's intimidating.
Working with the youth is one way to change that perception, says Los Angeles County Sheriff Jim McDonald.
Getting to a family through their children allows us to be able to have an opportunity to really take our relationships to another level.
Now we're taking away what's left.
McDonald says community outreach is one reason why violent crimes have been decreasing countywide. But gangs and crime still exist here, and having places like the Youth Activities League in urban neighborhoods throughout the county gives young people another option, says Deputy Bruce McCall.
I try and do things to educate youth and encourage youth and expose youth to new and exciting things that they don't limit themselves to what may be going on in their community.
Most students who attend this after-school program for at least 6 months have improved self-esteem and are more confident in school. Brian Fuentes says he wants to go to college and pursue a career in law enforcement so he too can help those in need. Elizabeth Lee for VOA News, Los Angeles.
Thank you for joining us today for International Edition. You can get the latest breaking news and analysis on global events 24 hours a day on our website at voanews.com. And you can also re-listen to this program under podcasts. I'm Susan.